Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
Here today, what I'm going to do is give you an overview. Not just any old overview, but an authoritative overview of recent trends in American religion. I'm going to describe some trends in the general population, and I'm all going to describe some trends that specifically are happening inside congregations in particular. The data that I'm going to use is mainly from two sources, the General Social Survey, which is a big national survey of the American population that's been going on since the 1970s. So it's really the best source we have for tracking trends in certain kinds of aspects of American religion over the last several decades. And then also the project that Diana mentioned, the National Congregation Study, which we did for the first time in 1998 and then again in 2006-07, so we can start to track some trends among congregations in a little more systematic way than we've been able to do before. So that's going to be the source of almost everything that I'm going to tell you. So I'm going to just jump right in. I'm going to mainly focus on what's changing in American religion, but before I do that, it's important to recognize that there's a lot that's not changing in American religion. There's a lot of continuity in American religion, and it's important to recognize that American religiosity is, by world standards, extraordinarily high. We remain among the most religious, by any way you measure it, one of the most religious societies in the developed world. And I want to show you some numbers that illustrate how religious the American public remains. But also the main point of a lot of these numbers I'm going to start with is that these aren't much changing over the last several decades. So there's stable and high religiosity, certain aspects of religious belief. 63% of the American public says that they know God exists and don't have any doubts about it. If you loosen that a little bit and allow responses of saying people, yes, I basically believe in God, or I think I do, or sometimes that's over 90% of Americans do. 83% believe in life after death. 68% believe in heaven. Only 52% believe in hell, which is always an interesting thing. More people believe in heaven than in hell. The Americans are optimists, if nothing else. So these are pretty high by world standards. And again, the key thing here is that these haven't much changed in 30 or 40 years. These are pretty stable, these levels of basic, certain kinds of basic religious and Christian belief. There's also a lot of stability in certain aspects of religious practice and experience. Almost three quarters say they pray at least several times a week. A fifth say they read the Bible at least several times a week. About a third say they had a born again experience. What I really want to emphasize is not just that these are kind of high numbers, but that they haven't much changed. So as I start to talk about change, I just want you to keep in mind that what's changing is in the context of lots of stability and continuity. So it's important to keep that in mind. But some things have changed and are changing. And I'm going to talk about 13 different trends in American religion. I'm not going to do any big theory or explanation or new interpretation of any of this, and I'm not going to go into too much depth for any of this. Really, what I wanted to do was kind of introduce you to some basic facts about what's changing and what's not in American religion. Some of it will probably be familiar to it, but I hope at least some of it, I hope, will be new to at least some of you. Okay, the first trend that I want to highlight is increasing religious diversity and acceptance of it. And the second part is very important and maybe less well-known than the first part. This shows the basic facts of the matter. Since 1970s till the present, this gives the basic picture of American self-reported religious affiliation, meaning when you do a survey and you ask people, what's your religion, this is what they say. And there's several things that are fascinating about this picture. One is, and this is probably the most dramatic thing that's been going on, the percentage of people who say that they have no religion. This has gotten a lot of press recently. You've probably heard about it. The percentage of people who say, if you ask them, do you have a religion, who say nothing, is still a minority of the population. It's under 20%, but it's steadily growing. It's now somewhere between 15 and 20% of the population said, I have no religion. These are the people we call the nuns, and you always get a little bit of a chuckle because it's not N-U-N's, it's N-U-N-O-N-E-S's. That's an important trend. That increase is, well, let me do this also. Another thing that you can't see from here, but the people who are neither Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, or none, meaning everybody else, Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus, and all sorts of other people, are steadily increasing, but still remain a very tiny percentage of the American population. Increasing, in the 1970s, those groups composed about 1% of the population. Today, they're somewhere between 2.5% and 3%, mainly because of immigration, of course. But it's important to recognize that it's still a pretty small percentage of the American population. And I find it useful to point out, you'll often hear it said lately, in recent years, that there are more Muslims than Jews in the United States, and that's not true. There are about as many Muslims, Hindus, and Buddhists combined as there are Jews in the American population. Still, together, somewhere about 2 or 2.5% of the population, but growing segment of the population. This increase in the percent of people who say they have no religion is mainly at the expense of Protestants of various sorts. There's a long-term decline in the percent of the American population that is Protestant, and it's accelerated recently. And as you can see, here's the 50% line. The 50% line, which we are soon approaching, and so any minute now we will drop below 50% Protestant for the first time in American history. We won't be a majority Protestant country. In a way, that's just an arbitrary number, of course, but there's some symbolic significance to that, and it will happen any minute now. Maybe in the 2010 survey that's being fielded right now. I'm not sure we've fully grappled with the significance of crossing that particular line. The Catholic line, by the way, is deceptively stable. It's stable. Catholics make up about a quarter of the population. If it weren't for the influx of Latin American immigrants, that you'd see dramatic decline. If you broke that out between white Catholics, basically, and Hispanic Catholics, white Catholics have dramatically declined, much like the Protestant number. But Catholic numbers are replenished because most immigrants are, of course, Catholic to the United States. Okay, now it's not just, though, that Americans, we are more religiously diverse, I suspect you already know that, but we're also more appreciative. This has been, this demographic change has been accompanied by a real cultural change, that Americans are much more tolerant, and I would say even appreciative of religions other than our own. And there's lots of ways to see this. One way that also has gotten some attention lately is if you ask people, is your religion, or if you ask Christians, is Christianity the only way to salvation? Large majorities of people say no to that question. Large majorities of Americans say that there's truth in many religions. This got a lot of attention. The Pew Research Center asked people a couple of years ago whether they agreed that people from other religions can get eternal life, and it was 70-something percent said yes, and people said, oh, that can't be right. This must have been Baptists saying that, yes, maybe Methodists can have eternal life. So they redid the survey and asked about specific religious groups, and it does drop a little bit, but not that much. So majority, even of evangelical Protestants, say that Jews will go to will have eternal life, and right around half say that atheists will have eternal life. So this is a real thing. This decreasing willingness to assert that your religion is the only way, even among religious people, even in certain kinds of traditions that you might expect otherwise. So that's a real trend. We have long-term trends asking people, would you vote for someone who's not of your religion? And now almost everybody now says that they would vote for a Catholic or a Jew. for president if he or she was otherwise qualified, and even about 50% now say they'd vote for an atheist. But maybe the first, maybe the most important indicator of this increased religious tolerance and appreciation is increasing religious intermarriage, which is now in the first part of the 20th century about 10% of marriages were across these major religious lines, Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, other, none. Today it's about 30% of marriages are across those lines, and that will certainly increase as well as time goes on. And that, of course, is part of what produces this religious tolerance and appreciation, because many, many people have extended families that include people of religion different than their own, and that makes it a little more difficult to condemn such people. And some of you might have seen Robert Putnam just published a new book called American Grace, and he talks about this a lot. He calls it the Aunt Susan effect. If you have an Aunt Susan who's some religion other than your own but who you love, it's harder to say that such people are not going to go to heaven. So I think this is a very important trend, increasing diversity on the demographic side and increasing appreciation of other religions. Second trend is that there's more conservative Protestants proportionally in the American religious scene. This is showing the percent of Americans who identify with evangelical Protestant denominations, Southern Baptist, Assemblies of God, Missouri Synod, and so on, and the percent identifying with mainline Protestant denominations, Methodist, Presbyterian, PCUSA, Episcopal, ELCA, and so on. And it's really quite dramatic, the decline of mainline Protestant denominations. Like I say, if you did white Catholic participation among white Catholics, you'd see a similar dramatically declining participation. I think it's important to point out that so today there's twice as many evangelical Protestants, and this is in terms of denominational affiliation, there's twice as many as there are mainline Protestants, and that in the 1970s there were about Protestantism was about equally split between evangelicals and mainline, but this difference is almost entirely because of mainline decline, not much because of evangelical growth. It's because of mainline decline. And this is a trend, I think we understand very well what's going on here. This difference has very little to do with people switching from being mainline Protestants to being evangelical Protestants. It's mainly, a big chunk of it is simply fertility differences. Evangelical Protestants have more kids than mainline Protestants do. Over the course of the century, about one child more per woman, which may not sound like a lot, but if you multiply that over two or three generations, that adds up to a lot of people. That's a big part of this. There is a switching story, but it's not the switching story that people tend to think. It's not that mainline Protestants have much been joining evangelical churches. It's that evangelicals used to, with upward social mobility, switched to mainline denominations, which were associated more with social respectability and solid middle-class identity and so on. And that stopped happening sometime in the 1970s or 80s. Evangelicals with upward social mobility no longer become Presbyterians or Episcopalians and so on. And so that cut off a flow. And that's a big part of this trend as well, is that a lot of people who used to leave evangelicals no longer do. And then the third thing is that evangelical Protestants are much better at hanging on to their young people than mainline Protestants are. So they have more young people because they have more babies, and they do better at hanging on to them. And they lose fewer than they used to the mainline. So that's part of that story. But I think the key fact is that more of the religious world is evangelical Protestant than used to be, mainly because of mainline collapse, more than because of evangelical growth. That's something I'll come back to in a little bit. A third trend I want to mention is what I call softening involvement in religious congregations. And this is mainly about religious service attendance. This is probably the single most studied trend in kind of the demography of American religion, is how many people attend religious services on a given weekend. And this shows you the trend over the last several decades from several sources. This is the standard general social survey. We ask people, how often do you attend religious services? And this is the percent that is essentially say more or less weekly, and it's kind of been hovering around 40%, a little bit higher than 40%, now a little bit lower than 40%. But the first thing that I want to point out about this is that people don't tell the truth when you ask them this question. You're not surprised by that, I can tell. And we know that people don't tell the truth because we've done research where we do a survey and we say, how many of you have attended? And then we actually go count heads in the churches in the same area. And it's about half of the people who say that they were there were actually there. Another way you can do this, and it tells you something about what's going on when people are saying this, is that if you do a survey on a Monday, and instead of saying, did you go to church yesterday, if you said, I'm interested in how people spend their time, I'd like you to tell me what you did yesterday. And we're going to go through hour by hour. What did you do at 8 o'clock? What did you do at 9 o'clock? What did you do at 10 o'clock? When you do that, that's what this number is. You get about a quarter, about 25% of people who will say, I went to church yesterday. So you see the point. If you ask people directly, did you attend church, people who are more or less church people want to say that they did even if they didn't. But if you kind of don't, you ask the question in a way that doesn't evoke that identity, you get a little more truth-telling, basically. So the true weekly church attendance rate is more like 25%, and I think probably a little lower. I think it's probably between 20 and 25%, and not the 35 or 40% that you see here. Okay, so that's that. But what about the trend? It's very complicated, and you'd think it'd be easy to nail this down, but it's more complicated than you might think. We do have longer-term data on religious service attendance, and probably the bottom line is this. There's been decline in religious service attendance. Unambiguously, there's been decline from a high point in the mid-1950s through about 1990. This is kind of decline from earlier in the 60s. And then it sort of looks like we've leveled off since about 1990 to about more or less stability. The main thought I want to leave you with is that it's not going up. It's unambiguously not going up. Reasonable people, what we debate about is the story really declined fundamentally, or is the story fundamentally more or less stability? But it's clearly not going up. I think there's probably some continuing slow decline here on the order of a quarter of a percent a year or something like that. You can also see this is the percent who say they never attend, and that's been going up, kind of mirroring the percent of people who say they have no religion. But my way of summarizing this is to talk about a softening of religious participation as opposed to outright decline, because there is some ambiguity about what's happening at the moment. But this is one of the most significant pictures I'm going to show you. One of the things we ask people in the General Social Survey is not just do you attend now, when you were 12 years old or when you were 16-year-old, did you attend? And when you were 12-year-old or 16-year-old, did your mother attend and did your father attend? And this is organized not by year but by of the survey, but by year that people were born. So we're looking at different generations here. And here you see unambiguous decline in people reporting that they grew up in a religiously active household, basically. So in the first part of the 20th century, people born in the first part of the 20th century, three-quarters of them are saying, I attended weekly when I was 12 years old, and that's just kind of declined. It's now under 60%. Look at this percent who say that their fathers attended. The mothers declined and then sort of stabled, but the percent who said that they had fathers who were religiously active has really dramatically declined from about 70%, under 50%. So today, people born after about 1970, fewer than half grow up in households where their fathers are religiously active. I think that's a very significant fact. If anything predicts religious participation as an adult, it's religious participation as a child. And so this... I think it says something about where we're headed here. Okay, a fourth trend. I showed you at the beginning some stable numbers with certain kinds of traditional beliefs, but there is one traditional Christian belief that is unambiguously declining, and that's the declining belief in an inerrant Bible. Over the last several decades, it's declined from about 40% of the population to about 30% of the population. That's not hugely dramatic decline, but it is decline. And it's almost all about increased education And it's almost all about generational change. That is, younger people are less likely to believe in an inerrant Bible than older people. It's probably kind of leveled off and not declining further, but it is declining. I would put this trend together with what I talked about earlier, the increasing acceptance of other religions and religious diversity. And I'd say that one summary conclusion and interpretation we can offer is that even in the midst of high levels of religious belief and practice in American society, there's declining confidence in the special status of your own religion. Declining confidence in the special status of your own religion. That's one summary interpretation. So here's something that's a little depressing. The declining confidence in leaders of organized religion. This is based on a question that says, I'm going to read you some names of different types of institutions, and I want you to tell me whether you have confidence in their leaders. And this is the percent of people who say they have a great deal of confidence in leaders of religious institutions. And here I separated out everybody from regular church attenders, just to show you that the trend is the same. Regular attenders do have more confidence in religious leaders than people who are not regular attenders, but even the people sitting in the pews have had declining confidence over this period in their leaders. This is not as bad as it looks, or maybe it's worse than it looks, in the sense that people have declining confidence in all institutions in American society. So it's not specific to religious leaders. So again, I'm not sure whether you think that's good news or bad news that religious leaders are part of the set of institutional leaders about whom people are losing confidence, in whom people are losing confidence. But this shows you that the people have lost more confidence in religious leaders than others. Here what I've done is I've combined answers to what people said about confidence in all the other kinds of institutions and compared it to their confidence in religious institutions. And what you see is in the 1970s, people had more confidence in religious institutions than in other institutions on average. So there was a kind of surplus of trust in religious institutions. And basically what's happened is that's gone. Religious institutions and leaders now are kind of about average confidence that people have in them, as opposed to being on the high side compared to other institutions. So there's been a relative decline in the confidence that people have had. Anyone want to get the institution about which Americans have most confidence? The military is the institution that we have most confidence. A sixth trend. Oh, this is something kind of related to that. This is from a different source. This is just showing you there's been an ongoing survey of college freshmen, and one of the questions I ask is, what do you want to be when you grow up? And this is the number per 1,000 who say they want to be a clergy person. And it's been pretty steadily declined until about 1990 and then sort of leveled off. Probably this is related to the same underlying phenomenon of declining confidence in religious leaders losing relative status in the society. Okay, a sixth trend, very interesting. You hear a lot about polarization and cultural polarization and culture wars in American politics and society, and there's some truth to it. There's a tighter connection between religiosity and certain kinds of political and social conservatism than there used to be. This is showing you the correlation coefficient, meaning just the bigger the number is, the tighter the association between attending church, doesn't matter where you go, just attending church, and saying you have very conservative political views and saying that you identify with the Republican Party. And really all I want you to see is it's going up, meaning that people who are regular churchgoers are much more likely to be Republican than they used to be. These numbers tell you a little bit more clearly what the story is. In the 1970s, if you compare the weekly attenders to people who were not regular attenders, weekly attenders were a little bit more. This is the percent who say they were conservative or very conservative politically. Regular attenders were somewhat more conservative, 19% versus 13%. But look at the 2000s. Regular attenders are now twice as likely to say that they're conservative or extremely conservative than people who are not regular attenders. That big gap is what's new. and what people are talking about when they talk about polarization and religion's contribution to that is both groups have trended in the conservative direction, but weekly attenders much faster than others. Similarly, with certain aspects of social conservatism, tighter connections between being religious, being a church attender, and saying that premarital sex is always wrong, opposing legal abortion, even in cases of rape, and saying that homosexuality is always wrong. There's interesting nuances about all this. I want to show you a little more detail on the homosexuality question, because it's importantly different from what I just showed you about Republican Party identification and being politically conservative. What you see, it's the same graph as I just showed you, comparing in the 1970s weekly church attenders to non-weekly church, and this is the percent saying that homosexuality is always wrong, 85% of weekly attenders versus 67%, so the weekly attenders, of course, are more conservative on this than less regular churchgoers. What I want you to see is that on the politics one, everybody's trending in a conservative direction, but the churchgoers are trending faster in a conservative direction. When it comes to attitudes about homosexuality, both groups are trending in the more liberalizing direction, but the churchgoers are trending less fast in the more liberal direction. Both of those produce more polarization between the two groups. This gap is bigger than that gap, but the underlying dynamics are quite different and imply something different about where this trend is heading. So I think that's an interesting thing to point out. At the same time, as we see this increasingly tight connection between religious attendance and I want to say one other thing about this. We know something about why this is happening, and it's I think not obvious. One reason this is happening is what I showed you before, the collapse of liberal Protestant and white Catholic, but especially liberal Protestant denominations. So church attendance, religiosity, is more tightly connected to certain kinds of conservatism because the liberal side of Christianity has essentially collapsed religiously. So religiosity itself means a certain kind of religiosity now more than it used to. In the 1970s, about one quarter of regular churchgoers were evangelical Protestant. Today, it's over 40% of regular churchgoers are evangelical Protestant. So religiosity itself in American society has come to stand for a specific type of religiosity, and that's part of what's behind the increasingly tight connection between religiosity and conservatism. Another thing that's interesting to point out about this is that at least part of this is not religiously committed people being driven to conservative social and political stands, but rather the opposite. Lots of people have changed their religiosity to match their politics. We tend to think of religion as the primordial driving commitments, but obviously sometimes that happens, but there's also movement in the other direction where people's politics lead them to alter their religiosity in ways that have increased. So there's been sorting over these last couple decades of people into religious camps that match political camps, and it's not just that religious people have become politically active. That's an interesting story. Okay, at the same time, in kind of a counterbalance to this increasingly tight connection between religiosity and conservatism, there's more disapproval of religious leaders' political involvement. So this shows the question is, do you agree that religious leaders should not try to influence voters or influence government? And as you can see, between 1990 and 2008, pretty dramatic, steady increases. More and more people are saying we're tired of religious leaders' direct involvement in politics. So there's a backlash that we're in the midst of, and I think it'll be interesting to watch over the next period of time, a backlash to what I just showed you, which is this increasingly tight connection between religiosity and politics. That'll be interesting to watch. Okay. Trend number eight. There's one thing that is increasing in if you look at American religiosity, and that's what I call increasingly diffuse spirituality. And this is essentially the spiritual but not religious phenomenon that I'm sure you've all encountered in one way or another. It's still the case that the percent, almost all Americans, the vast majority of Americans say that they're spiritual and religious. But a growing percentage say that they're spiritual but not religious. It's now about 14% of the population, up from about 9%. It's especially this trend is especially visible among young people. So this is showing you just people under 40. Now almost 20% of people under 40 will say I'm spiritual but not religious. And that's going to be something to watch. It's not exactly clear what people mean by that, but they probably mean they're not interested in organized religion. There's also an increase in slight increase in belief in life after death, but that increase is almost wholly among the least religious people. So it's not an increase in a traditional kind of religious belief. It's part of, I think, this broader trend towards more diffuse spirituality in American society. I'm going to switch to talk about congregations now and a few trends there. But before I do, I want to offer this summary point that maybe you've picked up. Nothing is going up. We talk about indicators of traditional religious belief and practice. Maybe the diffuse spirituality thing, but no indicator of any kind of traditional religious belief or practice is going up. So there's some stability, there's some decline, nothing's going up. And I like to point this out because you do still hear people talk about religious revival and increased religiosity, but there's no signs of it at all. It's either stable or decline is the big picture. Let me talk about congregations a little bit. One of the things that really jumped out at me when we looked at the National Congregation Study comparing the 2006 to the 1998 results is the dramatic increase in technology use among churches. This probably won't surprise you, but the numbers are kind of amazing. Just between 1998 and 2006, percent of churches with websites from 18 to 45%, using email to communicate with members, now 61%, overhead projectors in worship. Nothing else changed that we measured changed so much over this time as church use of technology. When I first saw this, I was kind of dismissive of it. I said, well, of course that's true. But the more I thought about it, the more interesting it seemed to me, which maybe means I think about it too much. But really, if you just even thinking about the website, the increasing website, the web presence of congregations, there are some interesting questions that come in mind about the increasing visibility of churches on the web and the use of this for people to choose churches and how do church people decide what to put on the web and what their public presence is and how are they funding all this what were the resources going into that? What are they not going into because they're going into technology? So I think there are a whole host of, like the whole society, churches are wholesale going, adopting these technologies and using them. And like for the whole society, this I think raises some questions about the consequences of it. There's no stopping it, of course, but so we ought to be thinking a little bit about the consequences of this for American religious life. Another trend is that really jumps out of you is in worship. There's more informal worship. We asked a bunch of questions about different aspects of things going on in worship, and wherever there was a trend, there was a lot of stability, but wherever there was a trend, it's in the informal direction. More use of drums, more jumping and shouting, more, I already showed you the overhead projector thing, more raising hands, more applause, more saying amen. There's differences in this but across different religious traditions, but it's pretty much across the board. There's this shift towards more informality that is probably part of a broader trend in American culture towards informality in our culture. We dress less formally than we used to. We use formal titles when we address people. You know, even kids address adults by their first names and so on. So I think that's part of what's going on here. An 11th trend is aging clergy and congregations. We're all getting older. But the church people are getting older faster, and the clergy are getting older even faster than the median age of head clergy in the United States was 48 in 1998, and it's gone up to 53 just in about a decade. By way of comparison, the American population is also getting older, but only by about 1 year over that period. The percent of people in congregations with whose head minister was under 50 went from 48% to just 39% in 2006-07. Here's, I think, my favorite representation of that. This is simply taking the average age of people who are regular churchgoers and subtracting it from the average age of the general population. And it's been true for a long time that churchgoers are disproportionately older, but they're even more older now. In the 1970s, the average churchgoer was about 3 years older than an average person in the population, and now they're about 5 years older, which is kind of a lot over that period. So the church-going population is even more disproportionately old. 12, there's increasing ethnic diversity in predominantly white churches. This is there's a subtlety to this. Churches have become more ethnically and racially diverse even since 1998, but we need to be clear about what this means. We tend to think about ethnic and racial diversity in churches by thinking about what I call deeply diverse churches, meaning churches that have maybe equal numbers of blacks and whites or a relatively equal mix of black, white, and Latino, or something like that. And of course, such churches exist. They're very rare. And the number of those churches is not increasing over this period. So when I say there's increasing ethnic diversity, it's not that deeply diverse churches are increasing. What it is that there's more predominantly white churches that have some small numbers of African Americans, Latinos, Asians. Here are the numbers. This is the percent of predominantly white churches that have some presence of African Americans, Latinos, Asians. And you can see they've all slightly gone up, even just since 1998. So to say this another way, fewer churches are 100% white and non-Hispanic. This is especially true for Catholic churches, but even it's true in Protestant churches as well. Now, I don't want to overstate the significance of this trend. It's too soon to stop saying that 11 a.m. on Sunday is the most segregated hour of the week. The vast majority of American churches remain overwhelmingly white, black, or Hispanic, or whatever. But there's been noticeable change in this more diverse direction. But I think we've kind of missed the point because we've paid so much attention to these deeply diverse, truly multicultural congregations, which remain quite rare, but the real action is in the coming to a predominantly white church of one or two black families, or one or two Latino families, or Asian families. That's what's increased. That's what's shifted over the last decade or so. And we're understandably fascinated with these other kinds of churches, but I think we need to pay attention and recognize this other kind of phenomenon that's happening and ask what differences it makes for congregational life. It's not true for black churches, by the way. It's not true that black churches are no more likely to have a few white people in them than used to be, but white churches are more likely to have a few black people in them than used to be. That's what's happening, and we need to think about that. Okay, the last trend that I want to show you is from a different kind of data source, and that is the fact that there's an increasing concentration of people in the largest churches. More and more people are concentrated in the very large churches. Now, you all know about mega churches, of course, but this is a deeper trend than just the stereotypical mega church phenomenon. The average size of churches has not changed over the last 20 years. It's pretty much the same, but more people are concentrated in the very large churches. And here's the picture. And this shows you from about a dozen different denominations. And I know you can't tell which lines are which denominations. Don't try to. What I want you to see is that the line's the same for all the denominations. This is showing you the percent of people in the biggest 1% of churches. So how many people are concentrated in the very biggest churches? And what you can see is from 1900, pretty stable across the board, across all these denominations, until sometime in 1970s. And it's as if someone flipped a switch. And all of a sudden, the percent of people who were in the very biggest churches started to grow. Now, there's liberal denominations on here, there's conservative denominations, there's big ones, there's small ones, there's growing ones, there's declining ones. It does not matter. Across the Protestant spectrum, more and more people are concentrated in the very largest churches. Remember before, this is not because large churches have figured out how to reach the unchurched. I showed you before that overall church attendance is not increasing. This is the movement of people out of smaller and medium-sized churches into the very largest churches. So this is, I think, a very important development in America. It's not clear why this is happening. There's probably not just one cause. I think it has something to do with the economics of running churches that started the shift kind of qualitatively in the 1970s. But it's really stunning that across the whole Protestant world, this shift is happening. This is partly why I think people think that there's increasing religiosity in the United States, is because this trend makes religion much more visible than it was before. One 2,000-person church is much more visible than 10 200-person churches. It also makes religion more politically significant because the 2,000-person church is going to attract the attention of politicians more than the 10 200-person churches. And the pastor of the 2,000-person church will get to see the mayor more easily than the pastors of 10 200-person churches. So this is a real increase in religion's visibility in American society, and maybe even an increase in its political significance because of the concentration. But it's important to recognize that we shouldn't mistake this shift in religion's social organization for an underlying increase in Americans' religiosity. Social organization of American religion is changing, to make religion more visible, even as there isn't change and maybe even some decline in Americans' actual underlying religiosity. So I think this is something very important. And by the way, these data are from early 2000. I just had a student kind of check. We're now in 2010. It doesn't look like this trend has leveled off. These lines continuing to go up for every denomination that we looked at. It's got to level off somewhere. Because, kind of logically, the extreme end of this is we're all in one big church, which it seems unlikely as an outcome. So it's got a plateau somewhere, but apparently not yet. So this is going to be something to continue to watch. And I think I'm just going to stop there. So thank you for your attention. I hope you've learned something from this.
Thank you for joining us today for NECSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. We hope you found today's session useful and that it will support your efforts to ethically integrate Christian faith and social work practice. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NECSW activities and events, such as NECSW's upcoming convention 2011 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, from October 20th to 23rd, our quarterly audio conference workshops that we offer at no cost to NECSW members, and access to dozens of archived podcasts from the member section of our website. Also, we invite you to join NECSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NECSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening into our podcast session today.